Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 3, Episode 6 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me in the sunny Cinematica studio
is him. I'm here, Sci Guy.
And Kaylee.
G'day, team. It's so sunny outside that I actually took my top off coming into the,
the
studio.
Whoa. How did you do that? How do you get that, those, you know, six pack going?
No, let's get your minds out of the gutter, everybody. The car. But the Hutt motorway, it was very pleasant coming out here. And so, I'm in a good mood. It feels like summer is very much on its way.
It does, doesn't it? You're right. It's very warm out there. Lovely weather.
And not for movie going, though. Not for movie theater running.
It's not going to.
It's not going to get in the way of anything. It's not going to stop anybody.
You need to go to the cinema during like those peak sun hours for sun safety. So
get a break.
And actually a nice cool environment out of the sun. Come on in, have a drink, go to the movies.
In today's episode of Cinematica, Frank Langella makes friends with a domestic robot and Susan Sarandon in Robot and Frank. The New York fashion industry gets yet another documentary in Diana Vreeland, The Eye Has to Travel. Our special guest reviewer Robin Gallagher tells us why we should care about Twilight, and we'll be dropping a few hints about Bond 23 a little bit later on. But first, let's check out the mailbag. There was quite a lot of activity, backwards and forwards. People giving us tips and two-word reviews. Kaylee.
Yes, thank you very much. Did I read the two-word review for the Bollywood film last week?
No.
Oh, I went to a Bollywood film with my friend Robert Caddo the other week.
Well, that was your first, wasn't it?
My first ever. It was pretty exciting.
It's pure cinema.
It is.
Lots of drama. High drama, isn't it?
You watch everything. Everything. Music.
You watch a film for 2 hours and you think it's done, but it's only the intermission. You go back. It was incredible.
Was it kind of out of sync a little bit, too, when they were talking?
No, it wasn't.
That's not, not true Bollywood, then.
No. It was great, though. But Robert Caddo sent us his two-word review for Jab Tuck Hai John, The Heart Locker. Loved it, and I loved it too. It's quite the experience.
Excellent, excellent.
Did you break
stuff.
Into dance afterwards and song in the foyer?
No.
But the music is always really catchy, though, isn't it?
It is.
It's really toe-tapping stuff. We should do a Bollywood special at some point and get Mr. Caddo in before he goes to Sydney and get him to give us some tips about what people should be looking out for in the in the Bollywood department.
Very good.
It's surprising how much is released here into cinemas.
It's constant.
It's always exactly the same. I mean, they've got that day and date thing absolutely sorted out. Like the whole world opens at the same time, and you know, there's no arguments.
There's plenty of arguments on the rest of it.
The Mirka, I can recommend Robot and Frank, which I caught a few months back at San Fran Film Fest, I believe. Sensational Frank is their two-word review.
Yeah, Frank Langella, we're going to be talking about him a little bit later on. He really is one of the Hollywood greats, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yes, and I asked on Twitter earlier, or I guess we asked on Twitter as a group earlier today what people would be looking forward to seeing this weekend, and everyone said, obviously, it is Skyfall. Da-da!
And, well, this we might as well. We've been tiptoeing around the subject. And let's be honest, I am deeply hurt, deeply disappointed.
Sorry, Dan.
Because I'm the only film reviewer in the world now that hasn't actually seen Skyfall, because I came here to do the pre-record of the interview with Robin Gallagher, and I saw that there was a sign up in the foyer saying the Days Bay Kindergarten Association screening of Skyfall.
Everyone and their mum, literally,
seriously,
has seen Skyfall.
You know, they're kind of like heavy hitters of the industry. You've got to get them.
They're tastemakers, aren't they?
That's right.
They are. Yeah. They really define the market.
The word of mouth, get that word of mouth thing going.
Exactly.
I don't have a problem with that, but was there not a spare seat in the corner in the back for me?
We should put you on special notifications.
Yeah. I would have come out.
I mean, I'm just trying to think. It was ages ago that I watched Bond. Ages ago.
You're so annoying. Okay, so any hints you want to drop for people? Like, because everybody, we know that every listener to the show is going to be going to see it maybe more than once.
This I've seen
weekend.
It twice, actually.
Oh, shut up!
And twice. And I've got to say, the second time was brilliant. It was great. Awesome.
Yeah.
How much can you hate a co-host?
I don't know. Right, it's getting there, isn't it? I can feel it.
It definitely worth the cinema dollar,
right,
or the double up this week. It is fantastic.
So any sort of tips, anything that people should be looking out for that are particularly special sort of moments, without giving too much away? Because we're going to do a whole special episode next week, because it's the only film.
Yeah. I think if you liked Casino Royale, then you're going to connect with this one a lot better than the middle one. You're going to get a lot more out of it, and it's also going to, it's a bit more nostalgic, and actually there's a little bit more humor in there, isn't there, Kaylee?
There is.
Yeah.
Cool. Like,
Casino Royale was quite tough, really.
It was, wasn't it? It was quite brutal at times. Yeah. I watched Quantum of Solace again. See, this is how sad my life is. You guys were watching Skyfall. I was sitting at home watching Quantum of Solace to try and catch up. Now, my question for you guys, and without giving too much away, but the Quantum organization, which were kind of left to go about their business at the end of the last film, is this following on from that, or is that, have they just cut that storyline completely dead? Give me some hope, because I really want it to be resolved. I want Mr. White.
No, it doesn't have a connection to that in this one. Sorry.
Okay, so that's a half a star off even watching it.
No, I don't agree. It delivers on so many levels.
Yeah, you won't even remember Quantum of Solace. You'll be of Quantum of what? remember Casino Royale?
That yeah,
so
right.
That's okay, right. So we're just gonna erase Quantum.
And I've got to say, as soon as the film was over, I just wanted to run like Bond with the pointy hand and everything, and the knees up in the ground, like a panther in the night, I've been getting it on. I've been getting that run going quite a bit. What did I do? I was running late for another screening, actually, of something I had to go and see.
Another thing that I'm not allowed to see, probably.
Yeah, and I was running late, so I did the big run up the stairs in front of the...
In Bond fashion.
In Bond fashion. In front of the distributors. I'm doing my Bond. Lightened the moment, got me in. It was all right.
Well, look, I'm very much looking forward to catching up with you next week, and we may have a few other special guests who have seen it to get the full sort of the full Bond picture. Next week, of course, is a very big week in Wellington, because it is Hobbit week, and the Embassy Theatre here in Wellington had a massive sort of bit of redecoration of the front. There's Bilbo's house, the door of Bilbo's house, and a giant Gandalf on the front of it. The airport's now got a Hobbit baggage carousel. The giant golem. And so Wellington's basically been going Hobbit mad. The question is, next week, should we acknowledge The Hobbit, or should we just put it off until we've actually seen the film? Guys, we're not going to be... I haven't been invited to anything.
Mm.
I'm just going to be Nigel Nomates.
But really? Live from the red carpet? Here's Dan, live from the red carpet.
Yeah, I'll be interviewing other people who can't see, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So, it's all about the film, really, rather than the stunt and the event and all that sort of stuff. So I reckon we should wait until we've seen the film and then really go for it.
Of course. There's still time to read the book.
Well, it's not a very big book.
So there's still time. You could read it before what? Because it's the 12th of December. It's still a ways off when it actually opens proper.
Yeah, that's right. So it's got to go. It's got to have all of its international premieres first before it actually hits the cinemas.
That's right.
Yeah.
But
hold on. So it's opening. So the world premiere, Wellington, the 28th of November, next Wednesday. The Days Bay Kindergarten Association, the 29th of November.
Don't know. That's not happening. I can tell you that now. No, there's none of that. It just opens proper. Midnight, a minute past midnight on the 12th
Everywhere.
Is when there are screenings that take place.
Mm. Okay. Well, I think we should look forward to that date for your diary, everybody, because the Cinematica assessment, we will set the tone for all of the Hobbit coverage that will come.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'll do the midnight screening, though.
Right. Oh, that'll be a good show, too. All
those people will turn up with hairy feet and pointy ears. You want to watch it with those guys.
I don't know.
don't you?
I'm not sure. Now.
I could whip together a costume.
Talking of watching films, what have people been watching while they've been waiting for Skyfall? The New Zealand top five, Kaylee. Is it how exciting is it? I bet you Taken's still in there. If Taken and Pitch Perfect are still in there, then we've got problems.
Well, sitting at number five, down from two, is Taken 2.
Ooh.
In at number four, Bollywood film Jab Tak Ha Jaan.
Ah.
That's unusual to get in the top five.
In top five,
isn't it?
Yeah.
There must be one like hit it out of the ballpark, that one.
Yep. Yeah, I'd say it's it must have one. had all the stars in it.
It did, I guess. Intouchables is sitting pretty at number three, down to two from one is Argo. And at number one, who could have guessed it? Vampires still
right.
Suck.
I'd almost forgotten.
The Twilight Saga.
Yeah, but that, I tell you what, that is that's the fans coming first week, the word of mouth on it. Like it's not going to win any new people over to the franchise. You know, it really is just milking the people that
already
love it.
And being so close to Skyfall opening is interesting. You know, you'd think there'd at least be a 2 week sort of wriggle room there.
Yeah, considering we had a bit of a lull, didn't we, beforehand? Mm. So maybe the distributors need to have a look at their calendars a wee bit better.
And interestingly, at number six is Nitro Circus.
I know.
Plenty of dudes still going to the cinema.
Do you know, I didn't realize it was only for 1 week.
Oh, really?
Sorry, I missed that. What was Nitro Circus?
Nitro Circus.
It's like a big 3D cinema
spectacular thing.
What, like motorcycles,
bikes flying in the air, and cars going and explosions
in 3D.
In 3D. Right. Okay. Yeah. And I was like, hey, that would have been quite cool. I was going to take my boy to it.
And then Chad, gone.
The young fella. But it was gone. I was like, oh.
Well, I think that's a lesson for us all.
Only a week. Went to a website, said for 1 week only. I think that's because the live show's coming. Like the live event is
that's
coming.
True. It is. Yeah.
Well, and it's not the only one of those events that has been and gone very quickly, because the Led Zeppelin movie had very limited screenings at only a couple of cinemas in Wellington, and maybe only a couple in Auckland as well. And it was really only maybe three screenings across a weekend, and that was it. Boom, gone.
Rolling Stones is one on the Rolling Stones coming out.
Mm. Yeah, and that had its world premiere at the London Film Festival.
I think it's going to be
recently.
More like
it's a documentary.
Yeah, but I think I think it's going to be more theatrical. It's going to hang around. Yeah.
And then Coldplay has one as well at some point. It may be gone already.
I can't wait.
But it's Coldplay. It's like a theater release to coincide with the DVD release.
Yeah, I know, but I don't want to be put to sleep.
Isn't this interesting that cinemas are now being used essentially as marketing devices for other media? You know, and do you feel used, Si?
Not at all. No, I think it's just another part of the arsenal, isn't it? It's great. Yeah. I think it's a nice variety. It's no different than the Met.
Yeah, exactly. And I pre-ordered the Blu-ray of Company with Neil Patrick Harris the other day. I didn't think they were going to release it for people to take home. And I saw it twice here at the cinema.
He's better in White Castle.
Can't possibly be true. I've refused to accept.
You haven't seen White Castle, have you?
No,
there's Neil Patrick Harris in there.
Castle.
There's Stephen Colbert's in there.
What's her name?
Oh, Thingy Bob from Mad Men.
Yeah.
No, it's fantastic. It was the most fun I had in the cinema all year was that screening of Company. It was just so cool.
All right, let's get back on track. Cinema series at Dan's house.
Yep, back on track. Time to talk about fashion, of which I am a world's expert.
She would say, you're not supposed to give people what they want. You're supposed to give them what they don't know they want yet.
She was about ideas and about the magic of fashion.
There's only one very good life, and that's the life that you know you want and you make it yourself.
Vision! Vision is the word I just wanted to talk about her. She had the vision.
Did I say that already?
That's Manolo Blahnik. at the end of the trailer for Diana Vreeland, The Eye Has to Travel, which is another documentary about a former editor of Vogue magazine. Do you remember?
Perfect, you're doing it today because, as you said earlier, you were topless. So,
and you're actually looking quite stylish.
Easy tiger.
I think he's in the fashion stakes.
I think that overseas today, trip has definitely upped my game. Yeah. I have to say.
And you've got a collar on. I mean, I've got a collar on.
You have to use your imagination out there in listener land.
You need a tie now.
So obviously I was the perfect person to review this Diana Vreeland thing, because I am the fashion guru of Cinematica. Now, Diana Vreeland, she died in 1989 at the age of 86, so she oversaw many of the biggest fashion trends of the 20th century. She started her career in publishing at Harper's Bazaar in 1937. She was the fashion editor there until 1962. Among the things that she was most famous for, she discovered Lauren Bacall, who was a 16-year-old model, or maybe even younger, and decided to immediately put her on the cover of Harper's Bazaar and kickstarted that career that turned into an amazing Hollywood legendary career. She then went on from 1962 to 71 to edit Vogue magazine and basically turned Vogue into what we know now. If you saw the September issue in 2009, the film about Anna Wintour, who's the current editor of Vogue, if you put the two together, you'll see that Anna Wintour really is a kind of copycat. You know, like she's not the original sort of creator of this incredible persona that a Vogue editor has, that you can make or break designers and you can make or break collections, and you're a taste maker. Vreeland was an extraordinary character, and unfortunately there's not much sort of archive footage of her, and so in a kind of clunky way the documentary recreates interviews that were done for her autobiography with her with her ghostwriter, and two actors read either side of those interviews to try and sort of get more flesh on the story. But there are interviews with a whole lot of other people, including people like Lauren Hutton and Angelica Houston, people who were actors and movie stars and modeled for her, as well as Manolo Blahnik, Hubert de Givenchy, and Ali McGraw, who I haven't seen interviewed for an awfully long time. She worked for Vreeland at Harper's Bazaar in the 1950s when she just got out of college. So it's a very interesting documentary. I don't know if it's as well made as the September issue, but the subject is more interesting. The most for me, the real high point of it was actually looking at the work that she did, the covers of the magazines that she produced and the spreads, the photography that she inspired, that she chose. You get glimpses of an outstanding career in publishing. I was joking before, I actually don't know anything about fashion, so I couldn't tell you whether the clothes that she promoted or trumpeted were any good or not, but she certainly knew what the trends were, and she knew how to present them visually. And the last part of her career, she was actually working for the Metropolitan Museum of Art, curating costume exhibitions there and doing an absolutely fantastic job of that. So if you enjoyed the September issue, then you'll get a big kick out of this. If you enjoyed films like Valentino, the documentary about the fashion designer, then you'll get a big kick out of it. I do wonder, though, whether we haven't had enough films about Vogue editors, because I saw a tweet from one of the local distributors today saying, acquisition news, Mademoiselle C, 2013, a documentary about Karine Reutfeld, the French editor of Vogue. So that would make three feature documentaries about editors of Vogue and no feature documentaries about, I don't know, Hillary Clinton or Helen Clark, or like powerful, influential, important women on the world stage. And I think that says a lot about, well, probably says a lot about the visual side of fashion and it turning into kind of maybe interesting sort of documentary subject. But is it important, really? Is it really worthwhile? No. Sai shakes his head. You feel free to just jump in there.
I think it is.
I don't know. I think we're...
As a lady.
It's funny how as an industry there seems to be these patterns where, you know, something breaks out and does amazingly well, and then there's this kind of plethora of other similar kind of titles. And look, they're often it's actually the second or third one that's better than the first. I mean, I'm not saying that, but they still lose their momentum. You know, it's interesting how these things are recycled. It's an interesting point you make, though, Dan, about, you know, couldn't we be a bit loftier in our ambition
in terms of
you know, women in the world and what they, you know, the positions that they're in and what they sort of what roles they have and how interesting that would be as opposed to sort of fashion and
Because as Kaylee will testify, there's so much more. There's so much more to women's careers than simply being either a clothes source or somebody who advises other clothes sources.
Yeah, you know, there's cold steel.
Pardon?
What?
You've got to have the look. You know, remember cold steel?
Blue steel.
Blue steel. Sorry, you know, like you get blue steel. I mean, people.
Yeah,
work,
I think
people,
that's the boy. Yeah, there's the boy
work on that for
that.
Lives, don't? Yeah, well, most of their lives, cold steel.
Yeah. Well, look, I just think it's kind of interesting, but also a little bit disposable. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh. Maybe there's nothing wrong with all of these documentaries, but somebody please go out and make some of the other kind as well, so we've got some balance.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not saying don't make them. Just, you know, let's raise our game a little bit, everybody. I've got a one word review for Diana Vreeland, and it's actually her favourite word. She uses it a lot in the film, and it is pizzazz.
Pizzazz. which we've got. Buckets of.
Indeed.
You have got to be kidding me. I'm not this pathetic. I don't need to be spoon-fed by some goddamn robot.
Jed, it's not like that. It's new. It's more like a butler.
You're gonna leave me with this death machine?
What's the problem? It's a robot.
Hi, Frank. It's a pleasure to meet you.
How do you know?
And a little extract there from Robot and Frank Langella. And does anyone know who plays the voice of the robot?
Sarsgaard. Sarsgaard. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Sarsgaard, not Skarsgård. Yeah.
Sarsgaard.
Not part of that family.
That's true.
Well, thank you for filling me in on that. Now, this is yet another film that I haven't seen.
Really?
So, I don't know. I've been letting the side down over the last.
We're carrying it, aren't we?
Yeah.
Ouch. Yeah. All right. So, which one of you wants to pick up this particular ball and run with it?
We'll have fun with this, Kelly. The first thing I'd like to say though is that I think I'm perfectly positioned to actually have one of these things. By the time I get to like 70 or 80, you know, and I'm in need of assistance
in the near future.
No,
that's because it's when it was set.
I guess
the near future,
yeah. Oh,
not
true.
To insult
you.
Nice work.
Save there, okay? Nice save. I would be very happy to have one of these robots assist me.
It looks like it was designed by Apple, doesn't it? It has
it
a shiny iPod-y sort of look to it.
And it is. It's a neat premise, isn't it? I really like it. I liked it.
Yeah, actually, it looks really similar to a robot I think Samsung developed.
Oh, okay.
Samsung, if you're listening, we'll take three of those Samsung threes.
And also, apart from the fact that it's got legs,
plus your robot.
if it didn't have the legs, it would look like the white robot in Wall-E as well.
Yeah. And it is... it's very... I love these films where they're kind of set in the future, but they're not really. They're kind of very current and you know... It's not like everything's flashing lights.
Makes life easier on the budget.
There's that, but it's also so much more believable. I mean, this robot looks quite believable. It looks like something. And in fact, the film ends showing these robots in use, you know, these other... You know, robots in industry and helping people in hospitals as well. There was a big panda bear. They had this robot made like a panda bear lifting a lady onto a hospital bed. I mean, that was a real robot. I was like, oh my god, that's amazing. And why a panda bear? I guess it's reassuring.
It is. It totally.
I don't know. You wouldn't want it to just dash off and just find some bamboo though and leave you in the corner.
Well,
they
have to. I mean, if it was like a real panda bear, it has to eat all
the
day.
I know. I smell. Bamboo, I'm off.
Anyway,
slight diversion.
What's it about, Simon? What is? Can you give us a synopsis?
I don't know. I'm on fire today.
You are. Our poor listeners.
So this film starts off with this, you know, this retired character played by Langella, who is in this kind of state of squalor. He's in a beautiful house in the country, but you know he's messy and he's.
Is he letting himself go?
Well, kind of, yeah, I think so. I also think he does it because he doesn't want people to actually be there. You know,
but he's also suffering from some sort of dementia
or
Alzheimer's.
Yeah. And that comes along, that sort of develops more as the film goes on. I mean, initially when it starts, he's just living this way and he seems quite lonely, even though he's also quite crotchety. He doesn't really like, you know, his son comes to visit him and he's quite sort of short with him and his daughter sort of rings him every so often and again he you know, doesn't really connect with them, I think. And his son, in desperation, introduces this robot, which is there to basically act as a butler, to help clean, to help organize his food, and do all these things. But then this robot actually has more than that. It actually is there to make him healthier, and he eats, you know, eat properly, and do all these things, exercise, and so, I mean, geez, I could do with one now, actually. But so it's pretty impressive, you know. And so over a period of time, they actually become friends. You know, Langella sees him as his friend, and he works out that this robot has a number of skills, not just on the home care side, but that he could help him break into houses and steal things. And Langella's character is an ex-thief. He's an ex-cat thief, and so he's, you know, he's done time in prison. He's disconnected in a lot of ways from his family life and all those sorts of things. He was away for long periods of time, and so in some ways this robot has a stronger connection to that robot than his family. But in the middle of all of that too is this dementia, which is kind of ticking away, and he's just losing bits of time in history. And
Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, well, she's neat in it, and it's an interesting her yep. character's quite interesting, mm.
It's a little bit. She's got. Are you saying she's got a little bit more to do than she had in Arbitrage, for example?
No. Her character's quite important, wasted. But it's just interesting. And I love this idea. You know, this idea of, you know, this retiree getting revenge on these kind of wealthy yuppies that are living in the area. And you know, that's just neat. It's sort of like a little bit like Red in that respect. You know, these older senior people sort of taking it out on the young kids.
That's actually films about older people and independence and still living, you know, long after society has told them that they're not worth anything anymore. There's actually quite a big market for those films,
there is,
isn't there?
There is, and it's an interesting because Sarandon's character works in a library, and of course the library is hardly used. Everyone's got, I don't know, the equivalent then of iPads, and you know, there's no. People don't read books. Langella's one of the few that comes in there that gets books out and so on, and that's how there's this connection between him and Sarandon's character. And he becomes this, like when they come to convert this library into something, you know, new, and we're gonna sort of do a retrofit, and it's gonna be really interesting. But there's gonna be no books, you know. You can watch them on a screen or whatever, or read them on a screen. And he becomes this kind of museum piece. You know, they're all in awe of him and what he can say about reading books or whatever. He's this kind of throwback to the past that they all find interesting but also sneer at. And that's again his motivation for ripping these people off, is, well, you know, they kind of are disrespectful to his age and his history and all those sorts of things. So I thought there was a lot of things like that where it was you know, those pressures were sort of shown, or those situations where he was feeling not as worth, you know, losing his worth by these sort of younger people who were pretty arrogant in the film on the whole.
Kaylee, you saw it today as well.
Yes, I did.
What did you make of it?
I really enjoyed it.
Not being as close to the target market, perhaps, no.
I loved it. I've been looking. I've been actually looking forward to this film. It was just so like nice and light and like funny, and had these really nice emotional moments in it. And it was just so nice. Like, it was just so nice to sit there and enjoy this film. And it wasn't like a downer. You didn't hate anybody in the film except for like the yuppies. But it was the thing that I found really interesting is because it's in the near future, and like you said, this library is going through this transition, and he's witnessing this transition to this whole new era in the future. And if you follow any, you know, robotics and science and stuff like that, which I sort of do time to time, that it's like these things are very possible. And like Simon said, that they have all this footage during the credits of these robots that they've been developing and are working, and are even some of the footage is actually quite old. Like, those are prototypes, and now you can get helper robots that look like real people that are really scary.
It's a panda.
That look a little. They look a little bit like Renesmee, the baby in Twilight.
Yes, probably have weird names like that too. But this for me, this was just a really, really great film. Like, I cannot recommend this one enough this
Ooh.
Week.
Yeah,
good
yeah.
one.
I agree.
That's like I'm very much looking forward to seeing it this weekend.
Takes you away in it,
yeah. And it's a really yeah. unique buddy film.
Mm.
It's just right. yeah.
Well, I think Langella's. Totally underrated. I mean, he's sort of best known for being Dracula back in the late 70s. He was a bit of sort of matinee idol at the time. But he's really crafted out a great niche as an aging character actor. And, I mean, Nixon, what a fantastic performance in that. So, yeah, he's worth going to see. He's a draw for me, definitely. So, to sum up, guys, you've had nearly a few hours to think of two words.
My two words are Robo Bro.
Robo Bro. I like it. I'm going to say Senior Payback.
Excellent. Well, top work team. That is Robot and Frank, and that is also in the art houses around the country at the moment. So seek it out, everybody. Time for some news.
In sad news for all concerned, the subject of the successful documentary Being Elmo, Kevin Clash, has resigned from Sesame Street after a second accusation of child sexual abuse against him. In a statement, Sesame Workshop said the controversy surrounding Kevin's personal life has become a distraction that none of us want, leading Clash to conclude that he can no longer be effective in his job. This is a sad day for Sesame Street, the company said.
Indeed, yes. And this is a story I suspect, sadly, will run and run and run. Mm. And I cannot see this ending well, unfortunately.
Those people who love to text and tweet in movie theaters, none of whom are Cinematica listeners, of course,
mm-hmm.
will be excited about the new Dutch thriller app, which involves downloading an iPhone app and following a parallel storyline along with your phone. An amusing novelty or the thin edge of the wedge?
And what happens is that when the lead actress in the film receives a text message, your phone beeps. Along with it, and so you can read the text message at the same time.
Isn't it fantastic?
No.
It's awful.
It's like another source of revenue probably for somebody who's getting these texts going through.
Because you'd have to pay for the text.
That's right.
Yeah, you have to buy the app.
It's like, you know, when you go to sporting events, oh, text your mate and so on, you know, 20 cents or $1.20 usually, something silly.
I know. I just think that anything that encourages more glowing rectangles in a movie theater, you know, we have to stamp it out.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Now.
No, I'm, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, come on.
Come on.
Just back me up. Back me up.
You're right. No, it does my head in, actually. I mean, I guess it depends on the type of film, and in some ways that's in the context of the film. It's kind of a bit of a joke. It's no different than having a vibrating seat or...
Yeah, from a stunt point of view. Smelly vision.
Yeah, smelly vision. But you really... The number of times I've been to films and somebody next to me is... got their phone out, it does your head in. Like, it's just, and it's rude. It's just
and at concerts, so annoying.
Oh, but aren't they like candles now?
Yeah, but when they're doing it right beside you and their phone is super bright, like at least turn down the brightness on your phone.
It's when you go to an event and people are taking photographs with their iPad. So they're holding their iPad up in front of them, and you know that stuff gets in the way. Mm. Really does.
They probably get, a lot of them probably get stolen. Oh, no, my iPad got stolen at the concert. Well, you know, don't take it.
Exactly. Just enjoy.
Mm.
Have the memories, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, but like Robot and Frank, you forget those after a while.
Oh, that's an unpleasant thought. Right. Any more news?
Yes. In handsome action hero news, Tom Hardy is getting an action hero franchise of his own. He is penciled in to star in the forthcoming video game adaptation of Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell. He's also starring in the next Mad Max film, which is called Mad Max Fury Road.
I'm really worried about Tom Hardy now.
He's just become this big beefcake.
He has. He had some real potential talent.
Was old Hugh Jackman or something? I mean, I saw Hugh Jackman.
Now he's talking like this all the time.
Well, he was... That was fine. I mean, that was his character, I guess. But he's beefed up so much. He's just...
I'd pay my cinema ticket to go...
Really?
Yeah. He's, like, so manly. And he's got those big, like...
On the Gosling scale. Gosling's a 10.
Yeah. And I'm going to say Tom Hardy is, like... probably 9.5.
Oh, no. Take yourself aside and have a word.
No, it's the lips.
I love this. I love this. The two guys lecturing lecturing the girl.
Have you seen the video of him with his, like, baby strapped to his chest rapping? Hello, 9.5. Well, he is rapping with a baby.
Shouldn't be rapping with a baby. That's no good for his ears. You know, as a parent.
All right, that's our news.
No, there's more.
Oh, you found more news for us?
Yes, we were sent some news today.
Okay. I mean, Mad Max, I can see him in, sure, because he's muscly.
In less muscly news. The final Wellington Film Society screening for 2012 is on Monday, the 26th of November at 6:15 p.m. at the
Paramount.
Yes. The screening of the classic film High Society. They will be giving away prizes, which is very exciting, including 3 film samplers for Best Dressed. So they would love you to come out in top hats and coattails and your finest attire for the screening.
Have fun.
And it will be the social event of the season. Well, it'll be probably the second most glamorous event on Courtney Place next week.
You might try maybe they'll have the red carpet still out.
Maybe. All right. Great. Well, that's excellent news. Now, hold on.
About that red carpet. You know it goes for miles? Like, it goes...
All the way up to Reddings.
And beyond.
No, it's not. It's not going that far. I think it goes... Time.
Doesn't it go?
It's not going all the way. It's not going all the way to the Beehive like they did last time.
No, but it's going almost to.
It went all the way to the Beehive last time.
No, the parade did. The parade started at the Beehive.
Oh, I was like,
last
that's
time.
A lot of red carpet.
That is a lot of red carpet. I mean, well done.
Your rates at work.
Do you know that red carpet is very hard to get?
It is.
It's not an easy colour.
It's also really hard to borrow because I've had to try and borrow it for events.
Ever since the '80s, no moved us by. Those colours are gone.
Well, let's just have our fingers crossed for decent weather. When I saw the list of people who are going to be walking the red carpet, there's a lot of people. It's like, oh, really? So what?
And there's a list.
They've announced.
Ian McKellen's not going to be on the red carpet.
Ian McKellen's not here. But Barry Humphries is going to be here.
Cool.
Hugo Weaving.
Who's Barry Humphries?
Barry Humphries, Dame Edna Everett.
Dame Edna.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
But he won't be as Dame Edna.
No. But a lot of people didn't know that he was even in the film, but he was here in Wellington for like 6 weeks last year. And nobody
Mr.
told
Smith,
me.
Mr. Smith will be there, eh?
Mr. Smith, yeah. Hugo,
will Mr.
Hugo Weaving.
There?
Pardon?
Mr. Fry? Mr. Stephen Fry?
No, not on the list for this particular one. But it may be that the roles that they've had in the trilogy don't appear in this first
film. Right,
so,
that's true.
So, you know, there's always that to look forward to. But Cate Blanchett is coming for the red carpet walk, which is nice, you know. So there were a few names that was like, oh, yeah. And I mean, we've all seen James Nesbitt around, haven't we? I mean, James, you can't go anywhere without tripping over James Nesbitt while they were shooting.
Martin Freeman was at a lot of
And Martin Freeman, it was, yeah. Exactly. They put themselves about.
Oh, no, I did see Martin Freeman and someone else. I don't know. There was I have a friend and she was a professional like hobbit slash elf stalker, so we would always go to the same bars and sit inside leaning against the glass.
I reckon
staring.
This is really annoying. This is really annoying to our overseas listeners. You know that this is like I suppose our LA listeners will be going, oh yeah, that's what it's like. You know,
I understand. That bar where they had all the really short chairs and stuff, I never worked it out, but now it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. At the beginning of the show, we did our rundown of the top 5, and Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2 was the number one film in the country. There was not huge amounts of enthusiasm from my co-hosts for actually going to see that particular film. I had to for work. But
it was difficult,
Dan.
I mean, I was going to see Skyfall. I was going to see Hitchcock. I was going to see... what else was it? I mean, I just put it in. I couldn't. I would have.
All right. And so what we did was we got a substitute reviewer in. So we have a guest reviewer for Twilight, somebody who is actually really enthusiastic about the franchise.
After 18 years of being utterly ordinary, I finally felt I could shine. I was born to be a vampire.
So beautiful. We're the same temperature now.
I didn't expect you to seem so... you?
I have to report a crime. The Collins, they've done something terrible.
It's granddaughter. The Volturi think Renesmee is an immortal child.
She was born, not bitten. She grows every single day.
Oh my.
Well, I'm joined in the studio by prolific blogger and a pop culture analyst, Robin Gallagher, who is going to talk to us about Twilight. And the reason why I've invited Robin onto the show to talk about Twilight is that we have fairly diametrically opposed viewpoints about the series. So, Robin, welcome to Cinematica.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, especially talking about Twilight.
Yeah, it's one of your favourite subjects, and we should, I guess, get off the mark by talking about how Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2 is the final episode in what can justifiably be called a saga.
Yeah, they have quite accurately called it the Twilight Saga. Breaking Dawn Part 2 follows on from Breaking Dawn Part 1, which came out about a year ago.
Yeah, and at the beginning of Breaking Dawn Part 1, I think the lead couple, the vampire Robert Pattinson and his girlfriend Kristen Stewart, they got married, didn't they, at the beginning? Yeah. And they consummated that marriage some point in the middle, and then at the end a baby was born.
And that sounds like a pretty normal course, but this all actually happened within a few weeks, because it was the whole marriage because Edward is a vampire. He has some kind of weird biology, so it just happened in a few weeks, and suddenly she's gone from being a virgin bride to being pregnant with this weird vampire baby. And so the end of the last movie was her having just given birth, and then she was kind of
she was going to die, because this baby, this monstrous human vampire combination with these incredible powers, was just going to be too powerful for her pelvis, basically. Yeah. And she was going to break apart, and the only way that she could stay alive was if she was converted into a vampire and got all their strength, right? And that was the supposedly exciting segment of the last one. So the new film opens, and she's sort of woken up from a bit of a daze. Mm-hmm. She's now been converted to being a vampire, so she gets all spangly in the sunshine. And but she hasn't seen the baby for a while, and the baby's sort of done a bit of growing up quite quickly.
Yeah, the baby grows very fast, as you know. The baby's also on this accelerated timeline. The baby is a weird CGI baby, and it's funny because I was looking at Stephanie Meyer, who wrote the original Twilight books. I'm looking at her website, and before the film was made, she had this frequently asked questions section, and she actually said she wasn't sure if Breaking Dawn could be turned into a film, because she wasn't sure if technology could accurately depict the baby, because it's not just this, oh, the baby's in its bassinet or whatever. You actually see the baby acting a lot, because it's a crazy...
It's conscious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is conscious, and it is creepy, and it is completely unbelievable.
It's that whole Uncanny Valley thing.
Yeah, yeah. There's that, but there's also the fact that the baby, Renesmee, let's give it its birth name. Let's give her birth name. God. And Renesmee, she is as badly animated as every other CGI effect in what is a very cheap looking film. Would you agree?
I thought you were going to say she was as badly animated as the rest of the cast or something.
No, I shall save that.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'd say it's adequate. And it's a bit of suspension of disbelief thing. You know, you're not there for an authentic vampire experience. That's what True Blood is for. You kind of just put that to the side and just accept that they have this baby, and you know, I would rather see that done than have a midget in a stretch and grow.
Good call. I'm sure that was on the agenda at some point. So this baby is essentially not only a crime against vampirism, but a major threat to their entire way of life, because if the baby is found, then they will be found, and therefore, you know, their secret will disappear. And the Vittori, or the Vulturi, or the whatever they're called.
Vulturin Imugel? I don't know. Daniel Vittori?
Yeah.
Italians.
Yeah, the Italians. Michael Sheen and the Italians, they turn up basically to try and either absorb the child into their coven or destroy it, right? And so there's this massive battle at the end.
Yeah, because they falsely believe that the baby is an immortal child, who is this kind of a vampire child who will not realize how powerful it is and kill everyone, and the humans will find out, so they have to destroy it. Whereas actually, no, it's just a human vampire.
And it doesn't appear to have a nasty bone in its body. Her body. Yeah, she's got some kind of mystical spell that she can weave over vampires and werewolves alike.
She puts her hand on people's faces and they can see inside her and they go, ah, oh, yay.
So, now, I'll state my case.
Yes.
And that is that these films, from beginning to end, from the very first to the frame to the last, are just tosh. I can barely even to consider them cinema. There's no narrative propulsion whatsoever. They've been whole films gone by where nothing has changed for anybody. At least this has got a little bit of action in it, and at least it's got a little bit of a resolution to its story. And I'll give it some of that. But it's, you know, it's not Harry Potter, is it? And you know, Harry Potter isn't even Harry Potter, to be honest. But so I'm just wondering what it is about these films that makes people love them so much. Is it the books first?
I haven't actually read the books, so I can't compare that. And I know a lot of people who watch the Twilight films haven't read the books either. You know, especially the people who are hooked on them, the ones that are camping out, they haven't necessarily read the books. Although I'm
sure. So is the films that start this? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is the fact that Robert Pattinson is so dreamy. And that's what a lot of it is. And what I would say is basically you are an adult male in your 40s. You are not a teenage girl. When there's a scene in the film where Jacob has to prove to Bella's dad that he can't say your daughter's been turned into a vampire, but the alternative is to pretend that she's dead. So he has to convince her dad that there is magic about. So to do that, he turns into a werewolf. And to begin this process, he takes his clothes off, which involves lifting up his T-shirt and exposing his rather well-built physique. Now, when I saw the film, there were a lot of, I think I was the only non-teenage girl in the audience, and there was, you know, the audience was very appreciative of this moment. And I think if you're that sort of person and you see that scene and you don't have that kind of reaction, then you are not in the target audience for Twilight, and you understandably would not enjoy it.
All right, so I've got two responses to that. One is the taking of his clothes off in order to turn into a werewolf didn't seem to be that much of a problem earlier on, and later on in the film they can just sort of change.
I think their clothes...
So that seemed like a bit gratuitous.
Their clothes get all ripped. So all right. If it's an emergency, they'll do it. But at the end of it, they'll be naked.
Okay. All right. So thanks for clearing that up. So then I ask you, if it's not aimed at me and therefore I'm not getting it, what are the teenage girls getting apart from the eye candy? There must be something that it must speak to them in on some kind of deeper level, because, you know, eye candy is eye candy, and surely, and also I would imagine that it would be fairly easy to be to sort of chop and change who your eye candy fodder depending on the fashion of the day. But, you know, people have been following Twilight for years now.
Well, a big thing, one thing I do know about the books
fickle,
is that
word I'm looking for.
In the books, Edward is described in his physical appearance is described in quite precise detail, whereas Bella is a lot more vague. And people say that's because the reader can put herself into the position of Bella and think, I am this plain girl who is a bit of an outsider. Maybe I can meet the vampire of my dreams and everything will be lovely. So that's kind of what the appeal of the film is that a girl can watch it and can go, oh, I fancy myself as being Bella and having not just one but two hot boys desiring me. So yeah, a lot of it's just that sort of escapism.
And what keeps them going film after film after film? Does it take on a kind of soap opera aspect to it that you just want to know what happens next, or do they just the filmmakers just pushing the same buttons over and over again for its audience?
Well, the funny thing is, I actually think the first film is the best of the series. It was directed by Catherine Hardwicke, who did 13, and I think that really taps into the high school experience of it's about two quite depressed, miserable teens who find each other, and there's just a lot of teenage shenanigans. And in theory, Bella and Edward aren't actually much older, and you know they haven't aged all that much. But
by the time the film ends,
yeah. Up to episode 5, they're still about the same age.
Well, he is. He's 150 something.
And I think maybe she's only aged about a year,
right?
You know. So, but
isn't that creepy though? Like, I always thought that was super creepy, is that he isn't, like, he might look like a gawky, awkward high school teenager, but actually he is over 100 years old. He can play the piano. He knows all about fine art. He's got this fantastic library. And that if you actually, you know, isn't, I just thought that was icky.
Not just that, but he was a 150-year-old virgin.
Oh. Okay, that's even creepier.
He waited until, you know, he was totally waiting until he met the right girl, who was Bella.
Right, this is me shaking my head in just in kind of non-placidness.
But do you know where I learnt that sarcastic fact from? From Robert Pattinson, who basically is the number one Twilight hater. He just thinks it's, if you go on Tumblr, there are all sorts of hilarious animated GIFs about it.
So, what do you think these teenage girls, well, as there's also, how many years is this? It's been 5 years.
Yeah.
5 years. So some of these teenage girls aren't teenage girls anymore. Where are those teenage girls going to get their fix of this sort of wish fulfillment? Is it Hunger Games? Hunger Games seems to be operating on a slightly different level.
Yeah, I think Hunger Games is a bit more sensible, a bit more, I mean, sort of strong woman, positive.
Yeah, and not nearly so fixated about romance.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be something that comes along. You know, I think there'll always be, like, you could not have predicted 10 years ago that there'd be this rash of vampire pop culture coming along. You know, sort of zombies were a thing and vampires and, you know, who knows what's next.
Right. We'll close with, I forgot to remind you about this, actually. Sorry about this. But here at Cinematica, we sum up our films with two words. We have a two-word review. So I'm just going to pop you on the spot and see if you can help us out with the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 2, two-word review.
Team Jacob.
Nice work. My two words for Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2 is, it's over. Thank you very much, Robin Gallagher.
Thank you.
I was born to be a vampire. I'm sure of it.
Do you sparkle in the sunshine, Simon?
I think I'm the same temperature.
I was born to be better than watch Twilight. That's what I'm going to go with.
Ooh, harsh,
hey,
harsh.
All right. Box office speaks.
That is our show for this week. Next week, as I'm sure...
Hey, just I want... What? You know, given that we're actually going to review Skyfall next Thursday proper, I think there's a heck of a lot of time for people to send us in lots of tweets, lots of emails, lots of feedback.
Yeah, we want your two-word reviews for Skyfall. And is there a prize? Can we come up with a prize for the best Skyfall two-word review? I'm sure we could come up with something.
We'll think of something.
Yep.
We'll have a mystery prize.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
We'll have a whip round.
I could send them the Too Fat Polka song sheet.
Yep. So, but it may be as good as that or even better. So please send us your...
We're just looking around the studio. Yeah. Looking
standing around the room. Looking at stuff. It's a pin on my desk.
So we will next week we'll be giving you the full rundown of Daniel Craig's third outing as the best dressed man in MI6. And all that and more in next week's exciting episode. We've got compliance to talk about next week. That's going to be very interesting. Next week's exciting episode, can't even speak, of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, episode. Don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes so it just arrives magically every Thursday morning in your podcast feed. Leave us feedback at the iTunes store. Give us feedback through social media.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter with the Twitter handle at CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast. And as always, on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
This show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, which you can buy at the iTunes store. And we're going to leave you with some more music. No matter how terrible it is cinematically, the Twilight movies do have quite good taste in music. And the
which
soundtrack.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. And always the songs on the soundtrack you can't buy anywhere else. You have to buy them with the picture of the Twilight people on the front. But here, to take us
and there will
to
be
the
parties in years to come.
Twilight parties.
Soundtracks, I'm sure of it, like river parties and stuff.
Indeed, taking us to the bridge, as it were, Christina Perry featuring Steve Kazee, who, two people I've never heard of. This is A Thousand Years, Part 2, the closing credits of Twilight. So that's it. That's it from us from this week. Good night from me, Dan Slevin.
Good night from me, Simon.
And good afternoon from me, Kaylee.
Yeah. Hello.